All right, welcome to the WWE podcast. We're going to get things rolling in just a minute, and I have Mary Grader to join me tonight to discuss Monday Night Raw that aired last night, including Andrade losing the United States Championship to Apollo Crews. We had MVP truly being the MVP of Raw, the NXT trainees being the WWE fans for a night and hopefully for the foreseeable future, Edge and Orton being billed as the greatest wrestling match ever, thoughts on that, and so much more. So stay right here, guys. We're going to get everything started right after this. Hey, everybody. So it's not often that we talk about music here on this show or bands, but when we do, I think it's when it's worth listening to and when I run across a song or a band that I think it's worth sharing on this show. And that's one of these moments. And that's one of those bands that I think you guys should listen to. And it's just a particular song right now. And the song is called To the Fallen Sons. It's by a band called Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S. And they're a newly formed band from Sweden. And they love making music about history, which is really, really cool. So this song in particular is about Carolians and the soldiers of the Swedish kings, King Charles VI and King Charles VII in the late 17th and 18th centuries. So let me give you a quick sample. And again, you can find them on Spotify under the song To the Fallen Sons. It's by Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S.
WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, everybody. Thank you for taking the time out of your day or morning to spend a few moments with us as we go over Monday Night Raw. And eventful Monday Night Raw, certainly eventful. And so was my conversation with Mary Grader that is about to take place that I think you guys will enjoy. Because we discussed so much. I mean, yes, it was a Raw review, but we touched on The Undertaker and the documentary of The Last Ride. We touched on Money in the Bank and got Mary's thoughts I haven't heard her thoughts yet on the Money in the Bank pay-per-view that occurred a couple of weeks ago. So we quickly touched on that, but got right into what we loved about Raw and MVP versus Lashley and why we're loving that, or MVP versus MVP is with Lashley and why we're loving that so much. The marketing that Edge and Orton is going to be the greatest wrestling match ever. Why we completely destroyed that marketing slogan for the match. KO losing to Angel Garza. We talked about Seth having a new disciple in Austin Theory. Nia Jax winning the triple threat match and why Charlotte is in every single championship or is on every single show involved in a championship now. We really dissected that one as well, and a lot to talk about. There's really a lot to talk about, and we really had a great conversation. It's always good to have her on the show. She brings out the best and worst in me, which is the best part of having her on the show. She always gets me riled up on something. I don't know if it's intentional. I don't know if it's subconscious thoughts that she has that she doesn't know she's having, so she knows how to poke the bear. But she certainly got me going on a specific topic of Otis winning the Money in the Bank ladder match And so we'll get to that, of course, later in the show. So first, thank you guys for giving us a try and for subscribing. Many of you have enjoyed the show, and I really am thankful for all of you guys out there listening, and you wouldn't be what it is without you guys. And so thank you. You can't follow me on Twitter yet. I'm still working on a resolution. I filed an appeal with Twitter to get my account unsuspended and haven't heard anything. It's been about a week, so I'm like dying, right? I'm dying. Where is Twitter? I don't know. It's rough because I want to interact with you guys, but you can still talk to me on Twitter, or for email at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. So feel free to email me there if you have something that you'd like to get off your chest or hear me discuss. Speaking of which, tomorrow night is going to be a part, or a chapter 3 review of the Undertaker's Last Ride documentary. So prepare yourself for that. I may bring on a co-host. I may not. It's to be decided. But that's what's going to be tomorrow night, is the chapter 3 review of Undertaker Last Ride. So I'm really excited to be able to share my thoughts on this with you guys. As you know, this is probably one of the best things I've ever seen from WWE production-wise. Just absolutely amazing. Love it. Nothing bad to say about it. So we're going to review that in much more detail tomorrow night. And then Thursday, Friday is AEW and NXT. And then Saturday is your SmackDown review with our new co-host. So get in gear for that as Brian and Jeff dig into SmackDown and give you the full review that goes up on Saturdays. So get ready, guys. There's so much more audio coming this week. And if you're new to the show, there's basically a show every week. I mean, we have 7 shows, sometimes more, every single week. So we are just pumping out content left and right. Alrighty, well, if you guys want an ad-free experience, easy. Either hit the skip button, because skip buttons exist for those that are like, oh, your show has too many ads. There is a skip button, like there's a 30-second ahead button. Or you can just go to patreon.com/WWE podcast and get an ad-free experience there. You know, no skipping, streamlined experience. Pretty simple. So, all right. Let's get to my conversation with Mary Grader as we break down Monday Night Raw and, of course, talk about a couple of other things. So thank you guys for listening. As always, I'll talk to you soon. All right, guys, welcome to the Monday Night Raw review. And today I've got a guest, which is Mary Grader, and she's here to discuss Monday Night Raw with me. And typically I do these shows alone, but I figured I'd invite her on. It's been a while. I know that this weekend was supposed to be your show, and I had other commitments, so that's my bad. So we couldn't miss the week. We had to bring Mary back. It's great to have you here. How you doing, Mary?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Hanging in there like the rest of us, ready to just reopen our lives. Whether you guys are in states that are phasing the reopen like New York, or you're just reopen like Florida or Texas and you just don't give a damn, we're all ready to just get our lives back together. So hopefully things are going well with you on that end. But let's get into wrestling, because that's what we're all here for. And we are here to talk about Monday Night Raw, but I know that there's a couple of things that I haven't spoken to you about since we last talked. And that is, number one, Money in the Bank. Just give me your thoughts on the pay-per-view as a whole. Do you see any redeeming qualities about it, or was it just like a bomb for you?
I remember a couple of the matches being really, really good and stuff like that, but like I think like I forgot most of it because the Money in the Bank matches themselves were terrible. So you were right. You know, I was busting your chops a couple weeks back and saying, what if they shot it like Die Hard? Well, they didn't shoot it like Die Hard. It was just a bunch of campy McManigans stuff. And now that it's over, could I ask you, like, now if you compare that to, you know, the Undertaker match at Mania and the Funhouse at Mania, can you see where those were like good? At least there was a narrative thread. There was a story being told, where this was just, none of it made sense. I know everybody's like, oh, I'm so mad Otis has that briefcase. I don't even want to talk about it. It was a BS ending, and I'm sorry, he's not a Money in the Bank contender, and I just think they're going way too far with that storyline.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because to me, I mean, you know that I just absolutely despise the Funhouse, and to some degree despised, not completely, the Boneyard match, but – when you take that and then you lower the bar through the ground and bury it 10 feet under, the Firefly Funhouse and the Boneyard match look like, you know, works of art. So in comparison, absolutely. I mean, I would watch the Firefly Funhouse match 10 times over before I watch that Money in the Bank. I don't think I'm in my lifetime. I'm 35. When I die at probably 95 or whenever the hell my life expectancy is, I will never again watch that Money in the Bank ladder match. That's how bad it was. And yes, so to answer your question, now the Firefly Funhouse looks like something that is that I would come on here and rave about. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's like I usually go back and rewatch pay-per-views because most of the time when it's live, I'm on Twitter and I'm, you know, distracted. I might have friends over, but like I haven't even gone back and watched this. So I can't even remember like half the matches that happened that weren't the Money in the Bank matches. But yeah, it was just they pulled off WrestleMania really well. And it just did not deliver. Like there was actually expectations after WrestleMania. Like I know you didn't like those two particular matches, but now, like I just said, and you agreed, there was a narrative there. Mm-hmm. This was just nonsense. It was just absolute nonsense. Glad Asuka won. Glad Asuka got the title. I mean, I haven't talked to you since Becky announced she was pregnant. I think it was a smart move putting the title on her. I just hope that she doesn't lose it to Charlotte. Because I feel like that's what they're going to do.
God, please no.
You know, that looks like what they're kind of setting up for. I know Nia is going to come in and win the title. And I don't think Nia has earned it back yet. I don't care how big she is. Asuka has earned that title. So I was really happy that she won. But overall, and then both of them consecutively at the same time. Come on, man.
I know. And like you said, with Nia Jax, or with Charlotte, rather, I really... The thing is, when Charlotte won the NXT championship, I said, okay, she's going to be exclusive to the NXT brand. She's going to be there elevating the brand, elevating the women, having great matches, and they're going to make NXT feel special because Charlotte will be exclusive to NXT. And that's all but been the case. Charlotte has been on SmackDown with this now wild card rule that is masked as a brand invitational. That's nothing more than a wild card rule that I can guarantee you, as Vince would say, they are not going to follow that 4 per year per brand limit that they have on it. And then she obviously is on Raw, and she's inexplicably in a Raw Women's Championship number one contender triple threat match. So they just can't get enough of them, Charlotte. I mean...
This is what we were kind of like ripping on you a couple of weeks ago when it happened, when she won the Rumble. Like, this is going back to the Rumble when I was like, she didn't need the Rumble win like Shayna Baszler did. And then, you know, she won NXT and we were pooing all over it because I knew that it was about her and it wasn't about elevating other people. Again, NXT doesn't need her. But like you're saying, she's, you know, hopping to each show. And she's somehow in a number one contender match for the Raw Women's Championship that was just given to Asuka. Like, it's...
I think it shows the lack of depth of the women's division. And would this happen if this alternate universe of the coronavirus didn't happen? Maybe, maybe not. We don't know. We'll never know. But the fact that Charlotte is on all three shows now shows you that they are really shallow in the star power end. And I get it. I understand why they're doing it. And I get that they're trying to make things feel fresh and bringing on big stars and shaking people up and making big trades like AJ to SmackDown. That was just a thing that in passing they said on SmackDown last week. And so I understand. But having Charlotte on all three shows, damn it. I really hope it's not all about Charlotte. It shouldn't be all about Charlotte. And right now it seems like it is.
I mean, that's just the case with her. That's why we're trying to, you know, fool you. We're just saying, wait, you know, and you're right. We don't know if it would have been different. I mean, I don't think the women's division is that lacking. I just think that they don't, it's fallen by the wayside again. It feels very creative, has nothing for you, pre-women's revolution, and they need to inject some blood in there, but they have plenty of blood. I mean, the Iconics came back. And that was just like, okay, we've been gone for a year and a half. We're going to come back in the middle of this thing. But, like, now it seems like they might be splitting them up. I mean, there's blood there. They just don't give a crap. And I think they give less of a crap. And they've made Charlotte their brand. Like, Charlotte is everything.
I know.
And that's why conspiracy theory Mary wants AJ Lee to come back and kick her butt and take over her place. But that's not going to happen because I'm not right about these things. And that would make sense. But I mean, I don't think anybody's moving anywhere right now in the middle of this anyway. So it's just been wrestling's been a tough go lately.
It's been really tough. And but speaking of something easy, and we'll get to Raw. I need to ask you about the Undertaker Last Ride documentary that's on the WWE Network. And this is not a plug for the WWE Network. They don't tell me to sell you this. I do whatever I want on this show. But the fact is that this, and I've said this on my review show, is for chapters 1 and 2, and I'll be doing part 3 tomorrow night, is that this is probably one of, if not the best documentary WWE has ever done, in my opinion. It is so encapsulating, compelling. It's a look into a man's life that has been so secretive and assumptive behind the scenes. I can't stop watching. Time doesn't exist when I watch this documentary. So, I mean, those are my thoughts. What do you think about it so far?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It's so good. And you're, you know, watching this mythical creature, I guess I could call him that. Like, you're getting a look in his face, you know, at him as a person. And like, a lot of the things that you know, were led to believe as to why he hasn't retired or hung up yet, you know, you thought it was Vince in his ear telling him that he needs him, but it's actually him. And he's, his obsession with retiring, right? And it just humanizes him in a way that he's never been humanized before. And like, just seeing him break down, and but he's like, you know, he's the granddaddy, like, in my opinion, of the WWE. I've been watching that and Dark Side of the Ring coinciding. Like, I've been watching them at the same time. And like, they're pulling up, you know, clips of stuff that I forgot I remembered. And I'm like, oh, I remember that. And I remember that match. And I remember that Mania, and like, all this stuff. So I'm remembering that I watched a lot of this stuff from when he, you know, first debuted and all that other stuff on Dark Side of the Ring, and I just forgot about it. So it's really, really good, though. And if you're a wrestling fan, it's mandatory watching, in my opinion. So
that's what I said. I said, if you don't watch this, stop watching wrestling. I mean, this is probably the greatest career of all time. I would put Undertaker's career above Austin's. I would put it above The Rock's. I would put it above Hogan's. I'd put it, honestly, above almost anyone, if not everyone, that has ever had a professional wrestling career, not just for the longevity, because he's gone almost 30. It'll be 30 years in WWE exactly this November. It'll be very interesting to see what they do with this year's Survivor Series. I'm sure it'll be Undertaker focused. It could be, yeah. I mean, they could honestly retire him at Survivor Series. That would be predictable at this point. I don't know what Undertaker wants to do, and based on the documentary, I don't think he knows. And it is just, the bottom line is, this is absolutely a must watch. Even if you're not a wrestling fan, and my wife doesn't give a damn about wrestling. Like, she knows the big stars. She knows The Rock because he's hot. Like, all, you know, all these things that just the casual fan knows, or the casual just distance viewer knows. But I told her, I said, you got to see this. Even people that don't watch wrestling would be very interested to see somebody who they know, even if they don't watch wrestling, and go, oh my God, so that's what it's like, or that's what he did. Even if you're not a wrestling fan, yes, it is awesome. I mean, it took how many years to develop, and I am just at the edge of my seat through the entire thing.
Yeah, I was telling my friend that I saw this weekend that he should watch it. He actually watched Dark Side of the Ring, the Benoit episodes, because I said he should watch it too. You know, it is, and he's not a wrestling fan. Like, he hasn't watched wrestling since he was a kid. It's one of those things that if you want to know how the machine works, you watch this, even if you're just like, I want to know why people like wrestling, like, what's the deal? It's one of those, and it's really, really good. And his career, his overall au revoir, whatever that French term is, like, that his whole encompassing thing has just been unbelievable. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to watch it from the beginning. I mean, I remember when The Undertaker debuted at Survivor Series. I watched it live or on a tape a couple of days later. It was no joke. And it's a really, really good, there's not enough words to say how good it is.
No, there's not. I mean, I've never put anything over this much. I've seen a ton of documentaries. I've seen how many different video variations of Austin's career, or The Rock's career, or greatest moments. None of that. I mean, that's good stuff, great stuff. But this is like legendary. This is in a category of its own, because The Undertaker has been so secretive and protecting his character for many, many, many years up until recently, that it is just like an all-in-one, here's a look into the mind of Mark Calloway and his drive and his struggles with confidence and his struggles with injury. People don't understand how much this guy has been repaired and stitched back together. I mean, he's had 10, 15 surgeries, and he had hip replacements. We saw that one this past week. It is just damn. Like, I want to rewatch the whole damn thing now. And unfortunately, the next chapter, chapter 4, isn't until I think the Backlash pay-per-view. So they've been doing it one every Sunday they've been releasing, and now we got to wait 3 effing weeks. So I'm not happy about that.
Yeah, that's what they're going to do. They're going to drag it out.
Yeah, I think because they realized that this thing is catching fire. I don't know if this was by design from the beginning that, you know, they're going to wait now, but I think that's maybe what they're doing, because they're getting the sense that fans are just digging the hell out of this. So, yeah, this is awesome. But let's dig into Monday Night Raw that happened last night from where else but the Performance Center in Orlando. And for the first time since this whole thing happened almost 3 months ago, we got an audience in attendance, but those in attendance are the NXT trainees. And taking a card out of AEW's book, which is exactly what they did, and whatever, I don't care. The fact is, the presentation is just flat out better with people in the audience, regardless of who they are. So the NXT trainees played the WWE fans for the night, and hopefully this continues. And they made sure to say, hey, everyone's been tested, and they're staying 6 feet apart, recognizing social distancing, and they have like plexiglass up, like they're in an NHL, you know, game, right? And like, so I get all that. They're making sure everything is by the book, and I understand and respect that. But did you enjoy the NXT trainees playing WWE fans last night, or did you find it distracting, or what did you think?
I think it's a good idea, because I've been saying since WrestleMania they needed like the wrestlers to be watching the matches as they go on. But the only thing that bothered me was that they were standing around the ring. Like, you can't set up folding chairs, or like, isn't there seats already built in that arena? Like, yeah. For NXT, like, I just didn't understand why they were just like standing, like it was a big giant lumberjack match. But it added to it. It made it not as boring, you know, like getting boos and cheers, even if it was, you know, louder and more obvious than usual, it made the product better. But it's kind of like in this, I don't know what's going on Raw. Like, I watched like 3 episodes of like Raw, SmackDown, and Raw back to back, or SmackDown, Raw, and then SmackDown, because I just honestly, I haven't been watching it. I've been going back and watching it when I've been working out and stuff like that. So just kind of everything's like all over the place. It's very, very chaotic in wrestling right now.
Yeah, it is. But this is the time for WWE and all wrestling promotions that don't have a live audience to really experiment and do things they normally wouldn't do. I mean, this is the time to present storylines or create champions that maybe you wouldn't have otherwise put the risk out there to do, because you were fearful that the crowd may reject it. Well, there's no crowd there. I mean, yeah, you have the NXT stars now, but they're going to play along with whatever they should. They're going to boo the heels and cheer the baby faces. That's fine. And I agree that the presentation is just much better with people out there. And I agree, though, with the chairs. Like, come on, give them a seat. But yeah, I mean, wrestling is bizarre right now, but like I said, I mean, we got a new United States champion crowned last night in Apollo Crews, who came out of literally nowhere, who was an afterthought at best on the roster for many years, and is now the United States champion, beating Andrade. So I guess I'll start there. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, are you supporting?
I was really shocked.
Yeah.
I was just like, holy crap, he won. Like, but like you said, it's a good time to like experiment and put titles on it. I just didn't understand why they did it when Zelina's been so hot. We've been saying that like a whole bunch of episodes with her new crew. And then it seems like Austin Theory's out, and now he's with Seth Rollins. And I didn't even realize that AOP was gone. Like, it took me like a hot minute to remember that. And then I just don't understand why they broke up the group so quick already with Angel Garza and Andrade. That's what's the bizarre element. Like, and just put the title on Apollo. I thought they had steam, but I don't know. That's what's confusing to me. That's what I meant when I said chaotic.
That is, well, is it official that they've split, that Angel Garza and Andrade are not even a team together?
I don't know if they're not a team together, but I do know that Austin Theory is now Deceitful.
Yeah, no, it is chaotic. And I said that, you and I are kind of on the same page there. And with Zelina Vega, we've sung her praises many, many times on the show and continue to. But with her group, you know, we are like, oh, this could be really good. And then Austin Theory breaks off. And then Andrade drops the United States Championship. Angel Garza got a win on Monday Night Raw. We'll get to that later. But yeah, Andrade dropping to Apollo Crews. Okay, if this is just time to experiment, I get it. But man, do they see what they could be? What Angel Garza and Andrade could be with Zelina Vega? I mean, you had Drew McIntyre kicking their heads off every week, which was really hard to watch because that's not what they should be doing with these three or now two. So I'm not really sure. Like you said, it is kind of like all over the place, and they are experimenting. They're allowed to just kind of do what they want because like the parents aren't home. So the kids are just going to run around the house and do what they want. That kind of feels like what's happening here. But with Apollo Crews as United States champion, I guess I'll give it a try. It's something new, but I did love Andrade as United States champion. I thought he was on a roll. I thought he was, you know, headed to that next level. And maybe that's what happens after he loses the United States championship, that he goes to that next level. And Raw needs main event talent. Maybe that's what they're grooming him for rather than just defining him down.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was just thinking, that maybe he dropped the title because that's why they've been brewing this rivalry with Drew McIntyre, and he's going to challenge for the title. So that could make sense too. But I mean, all three of them kind of had Austin Theory went to another group, so I don't think he had a bad night, but all three of them kind of like had a poop moment, I can't speak. Even though Angel got the win, he did like that really creepy promo with Charlie. Yeah. Like, I know they're supposed to be, like, putting him off like a woman's, like, man, like a womanizer and stuff like that. But, like, it just came off really creepy and uncomfortable. And I don't know if it was because the audience wasn't there or if it was just really creepy and uncomfortable. Like, I was just like, what was that? Ugh. Like, I just, like, got, like, douche chills. Maybe that's what they were going for. I don't know. But it came off, like, really serial killer. It was just weird, you know?
I don't know what they were going for there. I've never, ever seen a interview. Well, I shouldn't say ever. I probably have. But in my recent memory, I don't think I've ever seen an interview done in the middle of a match, especially in the middle of a championship match. What the hell? What's Kayla doing back there? Right? Like, why would you do that? And what purpose does that serve of having that interview there, number one, in the middle of the match, which is disrespectful to the championship match going on? And number two, yeah, what the hell is Angel Garza talking about? He's talking about looking in woman's eyes and making love, and then he's going to do it again. It was very, as a guy watching it, I'm like, this is weird. I don't know if I should love the guy or hate the guy or think he's funny. I have no clue what emotion they were going for there. To me, that segment accomplished nothing other than just a very odd segment in the middle of a championship match that even the announcers said, yeah, we're not really sure what that was. I mean, to something of that effect. You know, we have a championship match going on here. I'm like, thank you. What the hell was that? I don't know. Bad timing.
It was just really weird. So, yeah, they had overall, Zelina's crew had a bad night because that came off really weird. And, yeah, I don't remember the last time they've done an interview in the middle of a match like that. Too many cooks in the kitchen, don't know what they're doing. I just think it was premature to break up the group. Like, if you were going to have Andrade drop the title, and I don't have a problem with Crews having the title. It doesn't bother me. It was just weird. It just came out of nowhere, like you said. If you're going to have him drop the title, like, why wouldn't he still have his backup if he's going after a championship? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just came off very, very weird.
And with Austin Theory getting kicked out of the group, why isn't he seeking retribution? I mean, he got his ass kicked. Zelina Vega slapped him in the face. Why is he not even addressing it this week? Is he that mesmerized by Seth Rollins? Or is it the logic that you can't have a heel group go after a heel group? I mean, maybe that's what the reason is, because what are you going to do? I don't think the fans would be that interested. But to me, it would make at least logical sense that you're going to be seeking retribution for somebody that just dumped you last week. But it's forgotten, and I had a feeling that they would just totally forget it because it would be heel versus heel. So I guess my next topic would be Austin Theory joining Seth Rollins' no-name group. I guess he's just another disciple. And personally, I think Seth lost a lot of steam after WrestleMania, losing to Kevin Owens, then losing to Drew McIntyre at Money in the Bank. And he just kind of felt disheveled. And I think what happened with Rey Mysterio is probably where they're headed at Backlash. I think it's going to be Rey Mysterio versus Seth. And I don't care that they have a retirement ceremony for Rey next week. That means nothing to me other than a setup for the pay-per-view. And so I think that Austin Theory joining the group is a good thing. You're always trying to build new stars and having young talent be groomed by older talent. You've seen it through the group Evolution. You saw it in DX. You've seen it in many other groups throughout the years, that's the goal. So I'm fine with that. I'm glad Austin Theory also got something to say this week along with Buddy Murphy, and they didn't just go, you know, mute and forget how to speak. And at least we heard something from them. That's what I liked.
I don't have a problem with Austin Theory being in Seth Rollins' group, but like going back to the Zelina thing, like he was already with a group getting groomed by like other dudes. I mean, Angel is kind of new too, but why couldn't they just put another person in that role that needs, you know, some shine, right? Like there's plenty of young dudes that are coming up that could have went over to Seth Rollins saying, and I think that they just moved Austin Theory because like Seth needed more disciples, because again, I literally forgot AOP was not around. I like totally had to look it up online. It was like, when was the last time we were on TV? And it was WrestleMania, because I guess one of them got injured. But it just, I don't understand taking one person who's already in an established group, who's starting to get like kind of heat and stuff like that, and putting him in another group, and then, like you said, no retribution. But, like, I think they just forgot about it because they're more concerned with Seth having disciples and dealing with that. I don't think it's a bad guy situation that they didn't want to do. I think they just took somebody who's already on TV and moved him when they could have just put somebody else in that spot with Seth Rollins. It doesn't make any sense to me. Do I hate it? No. It's just the whole transaction of how it happened, weird. Again, it was weird.
Stay right there. The WWE podcast will return after this quick break.
Hey, everybody. So it's not often that we talk about music here on this show or bands, but when we do, I think it's when it's worth listening to and when I run across a song or a band that I think it's worth sharing on this show. And that's one of these moments. And that's one of those bands that I think you guys should listen to. And it's just a particular song right now. And the song is called To the Fallen Sons. It's by a band called Carolus, Carolus. And they're a newly formed band from Sweden. And they love making music about history, which is really, really cool. So this song in particular is about Carolians and the soldiers of the Swedish kings, King Charles VI and King Charles VII, in the late 17th and 18th centuries. So let me give you a quick sample. And again, you can find them on Spotify under the song To the Fallen Sons. It's by Carolus, Carolus.
WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
But you have to remember, too, Andrade isn't exactly Seth Rollins. Andrade was the biggest star of that group. He's not even in the same playing field as far as star power that Seth Rollins has. So if you're talking transferring him, it is kind of weird. It was weird. But the way that it happened tells me that they have bigger plans for Austin Theory in Seth's group than they would have had if he was just hiding in Andrade's unnamed group. So I think that is ultimately the goal, is for Austin Theory to have bigger and better things in front of them.
Yeah, and maybe they not to be like playing this card, but maybe they removed, you know, Austin from the group because he wasn't Latino, and they're trying to build a Latino stable. I have no idea, you know, because they have Humberto there and they have that rivalry kind of going still, and Rey is, you know, was in both of those with Seth and with Zelina for a while, so I don't know what's going on. It's just a whole weird, maybe theory's a plan. I don't want to get conspiracy theory too much. I haven't really put too much thought into it because I just thought it was really weird just picking up one person and putting him in another group.
At least they were consistent in how Seth's recruiting his followers. Because we got to remember when then Buddy Murphy lost to Aleister Black for like the ninth time, he was sitting at ringside very distraught. And he was there for the following match, and Seth ended up picking him up, and that's how Murphy became his first disciple outside of AOP. And then you had Austin Theory, who was just beat down sitting at ringside, and at their weakest moment Seth ends up picking them up. That's a very heel thing to do, is to take advantage of somebody at their weakest moment when they're down and defeated and beaten down, and then recruit them. So at least, as kind of strange as you said as it is, at least it's consistent in how he's recruiting.
Yeah, I mean, there isn't a problem with the Seth thing. I mean, the week with Rey, when he did that to his eye, I really thought for 2 seconds that, like, they were turning him face. Because I really thought what he said, like, when he apologized to Aleister in the back, was actually sincere. But then they kept going with him being who he is. So I guess, yeah, the character is being consistent. I haven't had a problem with Seth Rollins. I think he's getting overshadowed by his fiance being pregnant right now, too. So Seth, he's Teflon. He'll be back in some sort of way. I really, honestly, hate his new music. That's the biggest problem I have with the new character. I like the character, even though he's totally, like, kind of biting off Punk when Punk did, you know, Straight Edge Society. His new music's terrible, and that's my biggest complaint. I'm always saying people should get new music with character changes, but nah, this is awful. I hate it.
But you at least know what they're going for. He's basically, without saying it abstractly, he is he's Jesus Christ. I mean, he is going for that look. He's got the hair. He's got now the entrance music with kind of like the angel voices and then the sunlight in the back. Like, that is ultimately, without saying it explicitly, is what they've kind of molded a little bit of that into him. I actually love the Monday Night Messiah character, or at least I loved it, and then it went down, and now they're kind of rebuilding it into this much more soft-spoken, just much more deranged. I love the disheveled look last week on Raw. He is just... I think there's an upside here. I think they're on the upswing from his WrestleMania Money in the Bank losses. I think they're on the upswing with Seth, and that's a good thing. I don't know, like you said, with AOP out, I think they need AOP back. I loved AOP and Seth together, so hopefully they end up joining him sooner than later. But all right, but moving on here, Kevin Owens, speaking of Angel Garza, had a match with Kevin Owens had a match with Angel Garza, and Kevin Owens lost. And, yeah, you could chalk it up to Angel Garza taking advantage at the beginning of the match or the beginning of the segment with Kevin Owens walking down to the ring. Angel Garza comes down, gives him a chop block to the knee. So right off the bat, you have this injury to Kevin Owens, which he played up throughout the match, but ends up losing to Angel Garza, I guess, clean outside of the beginning segment there. A bit surprising. I mean, you have Kevin Owens, who just defeated Seth Rollins at WrestleMania in his biggest match ever at WrestleMania, and then loses to Angel Garza. Did you like this, hate this? What did you think?
I thought it was a weird win. I also think they're trying to build Angel Garza, and Kevin Owens is already built. It's also a returning Kevin. He's been gone since WrestleMania, so I don't really know if they have anything for him right now.
Yeah,
because, like, you know, he did the show right away, and that was good. I like how he's carrying on with Natty destroying his set the other week. We'll get into that match in a little bit, but I don't think they have anything for him right now. So I think it's more of a, you know, we want to give Angel Garza the win because the rest of his group has suffered tonight. And he did a creepy promo. So I'm not reading too much into it. We got to see where it's going to go with Kevin. There's plenty of people that he can, you know, wrestle. But I just feel like everything that's going on right now, they really don't have a solid storyline for. I feel like they're making new storylines. I don't know. Rebuild,
new stuff, like you said. It feels just the whole show, just the structure of it has, since the whole thing happened with the no audience in attendance, has it just feels very, it feels like Seth last week. I feel like he is the embodiment of what the wrestling product has been since the coronavirus pandemic, standing it on the apron during his tag match. If you remember that visual of him standing there with his hair just all disheveled, staring into like nothing. That's kind of how the wrestling product has felt over the last 9 weeks. But we're all fans. I'm here for it. And the fact is that there are fans dropping off. You look at the ratings and they are at all-time lows. Understandably, the Raw ratings and SmackDown ratings, NXT, AEW across the board, everything is down. And it, as expected, though, I mean, you know, but you could also make a case, well, no other sports are on. You think people would be watching wrestling, but I think that people are somewhat turned off by the fact that the soul of what makes wrestling great at times and a lot of the show is based around the audience and the reaction and the emotion and the noise. Everything that the crowd brings, the soul of it is gone. So I think a lot of people are turned off by it. So
I didn't know if you were going still. Yeah, it's just, I was talking about how Edge, like, coming out of WrestleMania, like, was just such a kick in the balls, I guess you could say, to him, because, like, that pop would have been amazing, that would have been such a moment, and it's just been really, I keep repeating every time I've been on the show since the pandemic started, it's really hard to get into wrestling without, like, having a reaction. There are so many things that have happened or could happen that, you know, they would have gotten bigger pops. And it's just kind of, they're working really hard. I think the match quality has gone up, you know, because they know they have to overcompensate for, because there's nobody there to cover them. So it's good and it's bad, but just watching at home, it's like, no offense, watching baseball. It's just like, oh my God, like, when is this game going to end? You know, and that's kind of what it feels like when you're watching Raw right now. You're like, this is still going. And like, they're doing this stupid stuff with Street Profits and, you know, the Viking Raiders, who are supposed to be this big, badass team. And they're playing golf and
basketball
pranks. And it's just, you know, it's this stuff. Like, why are you doing this to these characters? Like, why? Like, I just don't understand. Like, I understand there's nobody there right now, but, like, you're trying new things. But why do you keep repeatedly doing this to characters that don't need this? Like, they are fine the way they are, or they're being used in wrong ways. I just don't. Makes me sad.
I don't understand it. And
I feel like I'm bitching. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to bitch, but I just I'm totally about trying new things, but the things that they're doing like are just coming off like fragmented. I don't know if that's a good word to use.
It is. Yeah, it's like we're playing Tetris and they keep turning the pieces the wrong way. I feel like that's the way that it's been, and it's not easy. I'm not saying that this is easy for them to do or navigate. And the fact is that we're only, you know, we're 9 weeks in, and you know, you have everything uprooted out of nowhere, and to try to re-put things back together, but not really show your whole hand, because I understand it too, that if I was WWE, I wouldn't, if I had great ideas and great storylines, I wouldn't do that right now. I would just kind of do as the best I can. And if it's mediocre, it's mediocre. Or if it's kind of weird, we're going to go with it, because we have really awesome things planned for when we have an audience back live. That's why I really fairly set the bar somewhat low for WrestleMania, somewhat low for all these pay-per-views, because I don't want them to blow off a huge return or a huge angle or start something great, massive, or some kind of like long-term story, because I'd rather have it in front of an audience, because I want to hear that crowd reaction. So it could be just a kind of a by the numbers type of like, okay, this program to this program to this program. It may not be super exciting for a while, But that's okay with me because I would save my aces and I'd have them in my back pocket too if I was WWE. I would not be giving everything I have right now for all the storyline ideas and things like that. I wouldn't.
I get what you're saying, and I agree with that too. I mean, I don't think you are going to see any returns while there is no audience. If there was going to be returns, I mean, they just let a whole bunch of people go. I don't think they're like, you know, signing people. But like, just look what we have right now during this. I mean, the Orient Edge thing could have started off super hot and it was going to be great. And because this audience hasn't been here, that it's kind of fallen flat. I mean, Edge might be cutting some of the best promos of his career, and Orton's doing good work too, but like a pure wrestling match, that's the next match. Like if this was live in front, like we might be getting bloody matches, you know, like just some old school brawling between the two of them. But like without the fans behind them, like cheering it on, like Edge's return is kind of falling flat. And so is Jeff Hardy's, you know, like we have the Intercontinental, tournament going on for the title since they stripped Sami Zayn of it. And I really think that AJ is going to win, but they might throw it on Jeff Hardy because it's Jeff Hardy.
Yep.
But yeah, I think if the crowd was behind it, they would want it. I mean, AJ hasn't had an intercontinental championship yet. I can't speak. I'm so sorry.
No, me either. So go ahead.
I'm having problems with my words today. But, he hasn't had that title yet, and I think he would be a great IC champ. So I thought he should have won Money in the Bank. I'll go back to Otis shouldn't have that briefcase right now. Like, heel AJ Styles with a briefcase, he doesn't need a crew if he has that briefcase. Because all he can do is talk trash the whole time, and you know when he's cashing it in, he's winning. Yes. So it's like they've kind of shot themselves in the foot, I feel, on a couple storylines that could have been gone. So, like, yeah, put the title on AJ. Like, let him have a run at it. Is it going to be as good as if there was an audience? Probably, because AJ's doing really good work still. But are they probably going to put it on Jeff Hardy? They're probably going to put it on Jeff Hardy. Because, yep. Like, Jeff Hardy's return fell flat, and they needed something for him, you know?
It's risk-free right now. WWE doesn't have to listen to any boos that should be cheers or anything that they don't want to hear that they've structured as positive and the fans are rejecting it. They don't have to hear it other than social media, which, you know, take that for what it's worth. I mean, social media can be a cesspool in and of itself. So WWE is really playing with house money. They don't have to hear about any backlash unless, like I said, you look on Twitter or wherever, of which, by the way, my Twitter account's suspended for those who don't know. And I honestly don't know why it's suspended. So maybe you can cue me in on that. But, I think that the two men that have been completely robbed by this whole pandemic the most, and everybody's been robbed, every wrestler on the roster has been robbed to some degree of this the pandemic and no audience, are Edge and Drew McIntyre. Those two guys, I think, got the biggest shaft possible when it comes to WrestleMania returns and title wins and all that, because Edge, as you said, he probably has been cutting the best promos of his career. Best promos maybe in 5-10 years from anybody. I mean, anybody. He is just doing an amazing job at the promo, and I guess that's where I'll go next with Edge and Orton doing this. Now, let me ask you this before I even touch this, because I have ranted about this before on my shows last week. What do you think about them billing this as, marketing this as the greatest wrestling match ever?
I don't know how I feel about it. Do I think they're going to have a great match? Yes, but the greatest wrestling match ever. Look, Randy Orton, purebred wrestler, probably one of the best in the ring. Edge also. I'm not discrediting any of them at all. But if you're going to say it's the greatest wrestling match ever and you're going to promote it like that, I would have different players in the match. And it's no shot at the two of them. It's just, it has this, like, I'm surprised they're calling wrestling match, you know, like with all the stuff in the past with McMahon not wanting to use that term. And I know they've gotten more relaxed with it recently, but it's still kind of a no-no. I just, like, if I think of that, I would think like Shawn Michaels versus AJ Styles, not Edge and Randy Orton. That's my personal opinion. They're going to do it. it's fine, but like it's like kind of like they're like, okay, well, what's the most like opposite of a last man standing match? Pure wrestling match. Like it just, again, like you're saying, they're just doing stuff, like, and they're just biding their time, I guess, till this is over. But I just think they could have gotten more creative with like Edge and Orton, like in a street fight, or, you know, like old school, you know, hardcore matches. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it being promoted like that. That's just not who I think of when I hear that title for a match.
And, you know, I'm going to try not to repeat what I said on my show last week. But the fact is, how can you possibly bill something as the greatest wrestling match ever when it hasn't happened yet? What I mean by that is, when it's the great, if you have a greatest wrestling match in mind, it wasn't promoted like that ahead of time. It just happened. And the fact is that these two competitors, we're supposed to believe, are trying to win. They're trying to beat each other. They're not trying to perform and have a five-star match. I'm supposed to believe, because that's the narrative of wrestling, that these two guys are trying to just win. They're trying to win the match. So if the fact of the matter is, if that's the fact, you're going to have Randy Orton come in there and what, hit an RKO a couple of times and boom, match is over because he's trying to win the match. Well, if you're telling me that it's going to be the greatest wrestling match ever, then that undermines what the premise of pro wrestling is, and that's two guys trying to beat each other, because now you're telling me that they're trying to not beat each other, they're trying to just have a great match. Like, you can't tell me that. And never, you know, like, you can't tell me that this match is better than, like, any Eddie Guerrero match or Shawn Michaels Undertaker at WrestleMania 25. You're telling me, because you said ever, they're telling it ever, that this match is going to be better than Michaels Undertaker at WrestleMania 25. I mean, I will put that match up against any wrestling match I've ever seen. And so it's just way over the top. It's something you shouldn't be saying ahead of time. It's something that happens in retrospect when you look back and go, damn, that was probably the greatest match ever. You don't bill it ahead of time like that. So I'll stop there.
No, you're absolutely 100% right. I didn't even think about it at that angle. You're absolutely right. Like, an Undertaker Michaels is considered, you know, one of the best matches, or if not the best, the greatest match of all time. And it happened naturally. You know, you get these amazing matches that you see, and they're like you said, they just happen naturally. So you can't promote a match like that. But again, like, for me, it's just, if you're going to try to say like a great wrestling match, like, you're going to get two technical guys in there that are showboats that know what they're doing. Daniel Bryan, AJ. Not that these guys don't. It's just different style wrestling. Do you get what, does that make sense? Like, Shawn Michaels is the blueprint for that. Everybody says he's the greatest performer ever. Best wrestler, and he was. Like, Shawn Michaels, you can't, I don't think I've ever seen a Shawn Michaels match that is bad, other than the one that happened in Saudi Arabia, because he shouldn't have been wrestling. It's just, I don't know. Again, wrestling's been difficult to swallow right now, so, like, I don't like trying to be negative. It's probably going to be a great match. I'm not saying it's not going to be. I just don't understand why they're promoting it like this. This is supposed to be a vengeance-fueled revenge match, and I'm expecting to see Orton and Edge beat the hell out of each other until one can't stand. Do I want to see it necessarily because Edge still has, like, a fragile neck? No. But that's how this thing was built. You know, it was animosity. Yep. And jealousy and everything else that they were throwing in those promos, and when he betrayed him and stuff like that, and Orton not talking. Now we're just having a great wrestling match. I don't know. It just doesn't work for me.
And it sets the bar just impossibly high. Like, you are automatically going to be disappointed from this match instantly from this marketing. Because anybody that watches this going, what do you mean this is going to be the greatest wrestling match ever? Really? I can't wait. It's not going to happen. I can guarantee you this will not be the best wrestling match ever. Any wrestling fan that's been watching wrestling for, like, you know, 3 weeks knows that this is not going to be the best wrestling match ever. I don't know how they say it with a straight face. I really don't. I remember Charlie Caruso, who was the first person to say this, when Edge came back and Randy challenged him at Backlash. And Charlie Caruso said, after Edge didn't respond to Orton's challenge, said that if this happens, this is could be the greatest wrestling match ever. And I'm looking at, and that's how they closed Raw. And I'm like, what the F is she talking about? Did she just go off into business for herself and say that? Or was she instructed to say that? And I hedged my bets on, she was probably instructed to say that, and they came up with the marketing slogan the tagline, the marquee for this match was the greatest wrestling match ever. I don't know who the hell came up with that, but piss poor idea. I mean, I really don't know how you come up with this and say it with a straight face. When she said that, I'm like, how are Randy Orton and Edge not laughing right now? I mean, seriously, this out of thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of matches over the years of pro wrestling, it's just stupid. It's flat out stupid to say that. And it's laughable. I'm sorry. As great as these two are, it's laughable that you're saying this for Orton versus Edge. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and your point, again, you're right. You're already setting the bar, like, super, super high, and everybody's going to piss all over this match on Twitter afterwards. And if you think that you're going to have the greatest wrestling match ever without a live audience, you're nuts. Because the crowd getting into that match where they cannot take their eyes away from it and they're reacting to it, again, go back and watch WrestleMania 25, Shawn Michaels, Undertaker. That crowd was like one cell. Like the way that everybody was reacting at the same exact times and the loudness of the crowd. They were like an amoeba. They were just flowing. They were just jiving with each other. And that is also what makes the match great. Especially, what goes on in the ring. But you have to have that reaction to it because it just adds to you getting hyped about it and being enthralled in it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what else to say. That's exactly what a great match is. It's not billed ahead of time. You just know. Like, it's something that the fans say that it could be. It's very subjective. It's not something that a company should be promoting ahead of time, knowing that this match cannot live up to those expectations. It's just all around bad. It's bad from a realistic standpoint of assuming these guys are actually trying to win and not just have a great performance. It's bad from a wrestling fan's perspective because you have automatically set the bar impossibly high. It's bad from just a general standpoint of anybody looking at this, tuning in and going, what, how, this is going to be the greatest wrestling match ever? So Flair Steamboat didn't count, Austin Rock didn't count, HBK Kurt Angle at WrestleMania didn't count, HBK Taker at 25-26 didn't count. Like, all of those are apparently just shoved by the wayside for Orton Edge. It's just plain, again, it's just stupid. So, any closing comments on Edge and Orton? Which, by the way, after saying all that, I'm really looking forward to the match. I mean, I really am. It's just the tagline. It's just flat out dumb.
No, and I am too. I'm still looking forward to the match. It's just stupid promotion of the match. I totally 100% agree. Like, just let them have a wrestling match. Right. You don't have to, like, tag it. They could have just had a wrestling match, and then maybe it ended up being really good. Like, if they had that mindset, could have been considered. But, like, it doesn't make sense. You're absolutely right. It doesn't make any sense.
What if someone gets injured, right? What if someone gets injured, they have to stop the match? Well, there goes – it's – there's nothing good about this. There's nothing. It's like Vince McMahon goes, all right, well, damn it, if you have to use the word wrestling, we're going to say it's the greatest wrestling match ever. I mean – That's such a Vince McMahon way to say, if you're going to say wrestling, at least say it's going to be the greatest one ever. I mean, Vince approved this, so it went past Vince's brain, and somehow, I mean, I don't know.
This reeks of Vince. This is all Vince's idea. Like, it's like the spot in the Money in the Bank match with them, you know, busting in on McMahon's office him saying, like he's grandpa now at this point. Right. Like, it's not Mr. McMahon. Anybody who says that's Mr. McMahon, go away. That's not Mr. McMahon.
No, it's not.
So it's just, this whole match, this whole promotion of this match reeks of Vince. Like, he's just running free shot down there now. Like, again, because you said there's no consequences. Like, he doesn't care about what people are saying on Twitter because everybody bitches on Twitter anyway. So now he just doesn't have to hear the crowd react to his bad ideas. And they're kind of like the media, right? Like, the fans are to wrestling, like, wrestlers and McMahon as the media is to, like, politics and stuff. Like, we're the watchdog. Like, we're trying to keep him in check. And look how many things have changed over the years recently with fan reaction when they actually do listen. He's happy as hell right now. He didn't have to listen to any fan reaction.
None. I mean,
nobody's going to tell him no backstage because that's why it's still like it is how it is now.
Yep, and the writers write for Vince. They don't write for what's best for the company, and the writers aren't even actually wrestling fans. They come from, like, other TV shows, or this is their first job as a writer. I mean, like, so... And there's too many of them to begin with. So this is like we are inside Vince McMahon's sandbox, and there's nothing we can do to get out of it until this virus, the restrictions are lifted. So, all right.
And XFL went under. That was supposed to be our saving grace.
Because it diverted his attention. Now all of it's back on WWE. I mean,
this pandemic has screwed us in so many ways.
God, yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. The XFL is just a damned company. I mean, or a damned idea. They just can't catch a break with that damn thing. So.
And it was doing well too.
It was. Well, yeah. I mean, obviously the ratings dropped after the first week, but it was steady, and people were starting to go, "All right, this isn't so bad." And all of a sudden, All right. Moving on. Drew McIntyre, Bobby Lashley. What do you think about this so far? They had the pull apart on Raw, and MVP is now with Lashley. What do you think about this whole thing?
I like it. I really don't, as a match, I don't have any complaints about it. I love MVP with Lashley. It is what we have been saying for years. I mean, we were always hoping, or I was always hoping he would get put with Heyman. And kind of Heyman has a stable of UFC fighters or, you know, MMA fighters. But MVP works. I mean, he's a loudmouth. He knows how to talk on the stick. He's been away for a while. He's still competing. But obviously at a part-time, you know, rate, he doesn't wrestle every week. He got his show back. But anything to get Lana off the screen. Man, I was thinking about this today or yesterday during Raw. What a downfall of a character. Like, just think about how hot Lana was in NXT and when she debuted when she was still Russian. And now she's this, like, Florida white trash bimbo trophy wife who all she does is scream on TV and have fits and has, like, her scream might be as bad as Vicky Guerrero's when I hear it. Like, the excuse me, like, you know how your skin starts to crawl?
Yes.
Like, but it, like, Vicky Guerrero had good heat. Lana doesn't. Lana has go away heat. And I really think if they're pulling her off of this, they have nothing for her. She hasn't proven anything when she's wrestled. I think she's going to get let go because Rusev isn't there anymore. They should have never broke that formula. And I have no idea why. And I think it was punishment because they broke kayfabe and announced their engagement, even though everybody knows that, like, people break kayfabe all the time without a sign off. And it's just been downhill from then.
That is probably the turning point. I do remember that very well. And I honestly can't remember the last time on a wrestling show that I, or really any show, that I've wanted such an attractive woman off my screen. Like, I mean, never. I can't remember, just because she's so, like you said, she's gone from this kind of uptight Russian chick that is kind of a badass and she's good on the mic to this screaming, weird on the mic, yeah, like trailer trash type of needy woman. And it's very unbecoming of her. And like you said, once she dropped the Russian accent, I think it went away with Kofi's Jamaican one somewhere, wherever these accents go. She did seem to have a downfall. And I just don't want to see her again. If they announced next week that Lana was released, I'd be like, yeah, I'd probably be like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry for, you know, for her family if she's trying to support somebody. Although I don't think she has kids, that, you know, maybe she can go be with Rusev, right? I mean, I don't know. I just wouldn't care if she got released. She just is, like you said, she's channel changing heat. It's not the, well, she's a heel. Isn't that what's supposed to be getting heat? But there's a difference between wanting to change the channel and wanting to see someone get their ass kicked because you're angry at that character. That's the heat you're going for. With Lana, it's like, ugh. You just kind of like want to skip through her segment. And so hopefully, and again, maybe they'll find something else for her to do. But right now she's kind of the jealous wife that is not getting any attention because MVP has taken that away from her. And so to the good part of this, MVP is truly right now the MVP of Raw. I mean, like, he is so good. And you know what? I don't think he's ever been better in WWE anyway than now that he's aligned himself with Lashley. This is better than Leo Rush being with Lashley in his 10-second poses or whatever the weird crap he did with his ass. I mean, this is MVP being a serious manager. He's all in. He has a great presence. He knows how to speak. He's real. I am a huge fan of MVP the last few weeks. I hope him and Lashley end up eventually, I don't think it's going to be a Backlash, but eventually capturing a major championship, and it could be the WWE Championship. Maybe they're grooming him for Bobby Lashley versus Lesnar. I mean, that match hasn't happened before, so maybe it's Bobby Lashley versus Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam in a non-title match. So,
ooh, that's hot. That's a good booking. See? Heyman versus MVP on the mic.
See?
Mm-hmm. That works, man. And it that finally, like, you know, Bobby Lashley is believable to beat Brock, and Brock is believable to beat Bobby Lashley. It works on all angles, and it's him as a champ. I would suspect that Brock would get the title back, but that could turn into a long-term feud if these guys want to go. I mean, they're roughly the same age, but they're in tremendous shape, and I don't think they're dying down anytime soon. So... But the problem with those two guys is they're big dudes who can't talk, you know? And there's nothing wrong with that. You just need to find that right piece. And that's why Heyman's been with Lesnar longer than I think any other wrestler that Heyman has ever been with in his career. You know, and Heyman had a lot of clients and a lot of stables. And I can't think of anybody. I mean, he's been with Brock the whole way. He was like missing for like 2 or 3 weeks when Brock first came back again. And then he was right there because Lesnar was probably like, I'm not doing this without him. And that's when Heyman came back to the fold. So it works on so many levels. And I'm not complaining. I'm really excited about this team up. And I just, again, I hope they get Lana off the screen. She doesn't even look like her anymore. She doesn't even, like, she got so much surgery or fillers in her face, and I'm really not trying to talk to her. God forbid she ever hears this, I'm probably going to get like a bullying thing, but there was nothing wrong with her. That's what I'm trying to say. She was beautiful. I don't get that about anybody, but she is not what she was when she debuted. She was a strong woman who was just like, I ain't putting up with your crap, and I got a pit bull who's going to eat your face. Yep. And them releasing Rusev, I think, was the biggest upset out of all those people that got released for me personally, just because even as the funny dude, like what they were doing with Lashley first, it worked. He's super talented, and it sucks, man, that she's there and he's not. And I just think she's on the way out to you now.
I'm sure she's mentally checked out. I'm sure that she's like, you literally released my husband, and I'm supposed to sit here with a smile on my face like everything's okay. And I'm sure inside she'll never show it obviously on camera, but yeah, I mean, she's getting a paycheck, but I'm sure that when her contract is up, I don't know when that is, that they will just say, we're not renewing. And that's my feeling, because based on how the storyline's going now, this is a storyline that's kind of becoming of, after Lashley and Lana are truly done, where does Lana go? I mean, she can't compete in the ring. She's not very good. I mean, let's be honest. Like, she's not a great women's performer. She's just not. And that's okay. Not every beautiful woman on the WWE roster has to be a great performer. Managers can happen. And she was a great manager for Rusev. Rusev's gone, and I hope he kills it in AEW or wherever he goes, and I'm sure he will. Or maybe one day he'll be back in WWE. People think that, oh, just because they got fired, they won't be back. I mean, how many times have people been fired from WWE and made a return? Almost all of them. So I hope wherever Rusev goes, he kills it. But I think Lana's on her way out, and I don't know where that'll be. Maybe she'll be staying home. Maybe they'll be trying to have a family. Who knows? I mean, who knows? Maybe Rusev and Lana will decide to say, hey, we have enough money stored in the bank. Let's have a family, and then we'll, you know, see what happens with our careers. I mean, so... Okay, moving on to, and this is the last note I have, is the Nia Jax, Asuka, and Natalya triple threat match. Nia Jax, Charlotte, and Natalya to face Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship at Backlash. Again, Charlotte gets stuck in this match with no explanation because she's already an NXT champion, but wow, what the hell, let's give her another title. And then we have Natalya, who has been on a pretty bad losing streak as of late to Shayna Baszler. Thought she showed a little bit of heel last week, destroying the KO set and seeming extremely frustrated. And then you also have Nia Jax, who to me was the very easy, clear-cut winner here. To me, this was very easily booked with Nia Jax winning to face Asuka Natalya wouldn't have been a very good choice. She's not. I'm sorry, she's not that interesting. She's been on a bad losing streak. Charlotte's got the NXT title. I didn't think that they would put the Raw Women's title on her. So to me, it was Nia Jax all the way. I don't believe Nia Jax will win at the Backlash. And there's also news, as I actually, believe it or not, folks, as even though my Twitter account is suspended, I can still see news. I just can't comment, like, or do anything. But apparently, during the Raw taping for next week's Raw, Kairi Sane sustained a cut on her head outside of the ring in a match with Nia Jax. So, that would tell me, if I'm looking at this correctly, that Nia Jax is still an unsafe worker. I don't think that they are going to put Nia Jax as the forefront Raw Women's Champion with her reputation what it is of being unsafe. I mean, this is not the first time. There's been many, many other times of her injuring accidentally, obviously, her opponents. So that's just my thoughts.
Well, yeah, but they love Nia Jax. So she gets put in those situations a lot because they want this huge, gigantic, scary woman who's also beautiful to be the champ. I don't know. I don't even, like, why did they put Charlotte in the match, too? Why wasn't it just a one-on-one? And Natalya, I'm so sick of Natalya. She's just so cardboard.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
She just doesn't emote. Like, every time she cuts a promo, I'm just like, oh, you're so boring. Like, it's just... It was a weird match, and Nia Jax was the obvious choice, but I won't be surprised if they put the title on Nia Jax. I'm sorry. I won't. They shouldn't. I like Asuka as, you know, champ. She's awesome, and she's having fun with it, and I guess she's kind of good again. I don't know. After the Becky thing, but she's still vicious. She was attacking her backstage and taking it to her, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean... Like you said, with Nia Jax, they do love Nia Jax, but they never seem to really pull the trigger with her. They never seem to, like, really trust her for any long period of time. I don't know what happened with my mic there, but they never seem to trust her for any long period of time. And I think that with her history of being a little bit unsafe, doesn't help her whatsoever. And to be honest, I'm not a big fan of Nia Jax. I think that her as a heel is the right move. Nia Jax as a babyface, I don't think it never really worked because it's hard to put the biggest woman in the division as an underdog. And at times they tried to have her do that. And I remember the angle with Alexa Bliss calling her all these names and basically being a bully. And I don't know. She's cast correctly. I just don't think Nia Jax is really at the level or ready to really carry the women's division with the belt. I think Asuka will escape with the belt. I think Asuka is a much more entertaining performer right now because of her wacky promo. She's a walking cartoon. Like,
she is amazing. She is a walking. She's so great. You can't keep your eyes off of her even when she's doing
even if it's train wreck. Yeah. She's a train wreck. And like, she at times it's almost embarrassingly bad because, like, she's just over emoting and she's like, her facial expressions are seriously like, well, I'm watching, you know, Looney Tunes. And it's just like, but you can't stop watching. And, you know, you'll catch the occasional easy peasy or some kind of English. And it's just like, why do I like this but hate it at the same time? So I've kind of come around and warmed up to Asuka's just wacky promo style. Again, she's kind of by default turned to a babyface simply because I guess Becky Lynch presented her with the championship.
Well, I also think her reaction to Becky was real. I don't think she knew. Because it came off very authentic. Mm-hmm. That, like, she was surprised that she was pregnant. You know, she probably knew about the title, but she probably didn't know why Becky was leaving.
It did
but
seem it, very
it's good, yeah. But I was saying she turned face because she was, you know, chanting Becky and stuff like that. But I think, like, with the angle that they're doing with her, even though she's out of control and she's just doing crazy stuff, I think they're focusing also more on her wrestling style and how she is actually really, really brutal. Because the way she's been going after Nia and just, like, annihilating her, she's been fighting rough. So I don't think they're going to take that part away from her. I think they're going to enhance it and just let her do crazy, crazy, crazy promos.
Yeah, it's I've never had a promo that I've enjoyed, but still at the same time, not know what the hell they said.
I have no idea what she's saying.
No, but I'm like, I think I like that, right? It's the strangest thing ever that simultaneously those two things can be true, that I enjoyed the promo, but I still don't know what they said.
Well, with her, like, it's like you can tell what's going on with the way that she's acting. Like, she emotes if she's angry or happy or something like that. She talks in the same tone.
Yes. Yes.
So, and Kairi Sane's great as her sidekick. So I've enjoyed this Asuka since it's happened. I wish the Green Mist, I can't speak. I wish the Green Mist would come back too.
Yeah, where's that been? I miss it. I mean, I was really struggling. I mean, she's still got the green tears on her face. You figure she'd be able to, you know, give it up some of that green mist. I miss it too, but apparently, I mean, we haven't seen it in months, but that's, I mean, Tajiri did it, and he was a babyface at times. He wasn't always a heel. It's, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I miss it too, but Asuka, I think, will hold it for probably a few more months, maybe till SummerSlam, as that's the biggest or second biggest event of the year. So Nia Jax, I just don't think she'd be that interesting as champion. I really don't, and they'll never ever.
She's whiny. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, she is. She's whiny, and she just is. I don't know. She's not great on the mic. I think she's got a great future ahead of her. She was sidelined with a double knee surgery for a year. That certainly put her on the back burner. I think she's starting to get her legs, no pun intended, back into wrestling and start to understand how to cut a promo again. But she's never really blown me away with a promo. She's just – the biggest thing about her, pun intended, I guess, is her size. And you got to be careful because she's a woman – so you can't talk about her size too much, or you certainly can't put a number on her weight. Although if I was going to, she's probably pushing 250. I mean, she probably is 240, 250 pounds. So that gives her a 100-pound weight advantage over Asuka. I really believe that. But obviously you can't do that because of the whole standard on, you know, you can't talk about women's weight. And I get it, but they'll never talk about that. But that's the biggest advantage that she has. It's the size difference. And that's the biggest asset that she has, is not looking like the rest of the roster. That's a great asset. She's a pretty girl. She is bigger than every other girl on the roster, and she is a giant in her division, and that gives her an advantage. But they got to be very careful talking about that stuff, and I understand.
Yeah, but I don't know. She's just so if she's hurting people again, I don't know. It's kind of hot cold with her. She has had good matches, or just never anything that's blown my mind.
No, I mean, maybe Tamina will come out and they'll have a stare down. I mean,
where did Tamina go?
she'll be. I mean, yeah, she had her moment in the sun. That'll probably be her only championship match.
Did she get like? She yeah. always shows up for like three episodes and then vanishes again.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, she'll show up for the Rumble, right? Like that's probably the next time she'll be like in the Rumble, an entrant. She'll clear out a couple of people, and then you'll see her, in 6 months. I mean, that's just Tamina's schedule. Yeah, I don't know. Tamina's she's like the silver fox. She shows up and then you never see her again. So, all right. So that's really all I had. Did you have anything else? I feel like I missed some stuff. I'm sure I did. For everybody listening, I see the Hulu version. I read everything else that happens. But was there anything else, Mary, that I didn't touch on?
I don't think so. I'm trying to think. I didn't know that AJ Styles went back to SmackDown, so that was news to me.
That's what they said. He got sent to SmackDown. It was just an announcement via the announcers. It wasn't like this big thing. AJ Styles comes out to Raw, or comes out on SmackDown, and the announcers say that, and our newest acquisition to SmackDown is AJ Styles, and Raw will be getting, I don't know, they said they'll be getting, was it wrestlers or performers, however they phrased it, at a later date, like for our future considerations is what they said, which is, I know what they say. They say that in drafts or trades with the NFL. They say that in trades with the MLB. So they're using the language that other professional sports use, but it's just not realistic that you took one of the top guys in WWE and you're saying they're just for future considerations. Like, how does that work? Like, that happens for like no name guys in major sports, not for like your franchise player. It's usually a major blockbuster trade that happens. And in this case, it was just, yeah, he's on SmackDown now, but we'll worry about Raw later. That's basically what they said.
I mean, they could have like made it where AJ just came out on SmackDown and was like, I decided I'm coming here. Screw you guys. Like, I don't want to be on Raw, or I'm going to be on both, like, instead of doing that stuff. Because I'm mad right now. This is what I want to touch on. It's not Raw related, but we didn't talk about Money in the Bank. Like, how do you feel about Otis having the briefcase?
You know, when let me just say this, and I'm not going to go on a long thing here. I'll make it relatively quick. Is Otis, I was intrigued with him. In a tag team, there's usually a star on the tag team that is clearly the bigger guy or gal on that team that you know is going to just have a better career, a higher ceiling in the career of that of the individuals. And that's just the fact of wrestling. There's always usually a star on the team, unless you're Jimmy or Jey Uso, in which they're kind of even. But
yeah, they're twins.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. I mean, and even there, I guess you can make a case for one, but nonetheless, that's 99% of the time the case. And Otis was clearly the star of Heavy Machinery. I mean, Tucker is easily an afterthought. He's a guy that you're just like, oh, that's right, he's with Tucker. But he's never on that. He's not even addressing the fact that he's in a tag team anymore. So he goes into this Money in the Bank ladder match, and I'm thinking, no way, no way. And they do this stupid crap with him eating food and Vince McMahon's obsession with watching fat people eat food and thinking it's some kind of comedy and whatever audience he thinks he's serving of, you know, apparently it's kindergarten students that he thinks is the target audience of this. And Vince McMahon is probably knee slapping, laughing backstage of how funny this is that he's got like salami hanging out of his mouth or whatever the hell he's doing, getting distracted by cafeterias when you have the opportunity of a lifetime and what you're in the WWE for, you're distracted by a cafeteria. I mean, just, or food fights, which is just the epitome of terrible, terrible pro wrestling in 2020.
Audibly when I saw the food fight.
God, like, and you saw it coming a mile away. You saw it coming a mile away. And like, if everyone knows where the briefcase is, why is anyone stopping on any floor instead of just using the stairs or the elevators to just go to the very top? Like, what? Why is everybody worrying about, you know, chasing everyone else like a single file, like they're chasing the 24/7 championship? I mean, I could go on forever. So, God damn, this stuff pisses me off. So, the fact of the matter is, with Otis winning the Money in the Bank briefcase, I do not like it for a number of reasons. Number one, they present Otis as a comedy character. They don't present him in any kind of serious light. He's kind of like the bumbling buffoon that somehow lucked his way into the pretty girl. He doesn't and has yet to cut a great promo. He is very kind of one-dimensional so far, and it's not his fault. He's been on Raw for a cup of coffee, or on SmackDown for a cup of coffee. He's been there, my God, like, what, a year? I mean, he hasn't had much time to have character growth. We don't know much about him outside of, ooh, yeah, and he wears, you know, tank tops four sizes too small, and he does the caterpillar, which is the cut, basically a rip-off of the worm from Scotty Too Hotty. He doesn't have a whole lot there, and he wins the Money in the Bank briefcase. I can't talk either tonight. And he is now supposed to be considered for a major championship opportunity, assuming he goes for the top belt. You don't have to, but it would be kind of stupid for him to do it. And imagine him winning. I mean, who's he going to cash in against? I mean, he can hang on to it for a year. We know that. But it's a terrible thing to do for a guy that is comedy based. Now you're defining down the Money in the Bank briefcase and the championship that he goes after, and he hasn't had a whole lot of character development, and he is kind of not looked at as very intelligent. I mean, like, let's be honest, he has not been presented as very smart, and you want a babyface that's a smart guy. Yeah, he's kind of like the lovable loser. Like, that's how he feels. I don't want to feel that way with the Money in the Bank briefcase. And he ends up stumbling into it because AJ fumbled it, like, you know, he was on the goal line trying to get into the end zone. Like, that's how it feels. And I'm not a fan of it. It also seems like too much too soon on top of all that.
Yeah, well, the thing with AJ, this is what I don't – they fumbled the end of the match. Like, AJ got it off the hook, and then he started tug-of-warring it on top of the ladder with somebody. Forgot who it was, and then it popped out of their hands and dropped into Otis. Why did AJ Styles come out and start fighting about that? That is up AJ Styles' alley as a character. Why wouldn't he be coming out and saying, I got robbed, I took it off the hook, this guy, you know, and goes after Otis, and maybe they have a match where he wins. Maybe that's why AJ went to SmackDown. Maybe that's going to happen. But, yeah, who's he going to cash it in on and win and be champ? Otis, world champion.
No. No, please. Please. Or I hope he fails.
Universal champion, whatever. No.
No. It's honestly made me resent the character. I'm starting to kind of go down on the character because it seems like way too much too soon. Why the hell they didn't just make this a straightforward AJ Styles win is it seems like one of those, everyone thinks AJ's going to win. Let's make it Otis. Like, no, I don't want to do something to shock people. I want to do something because it's the right thing, even if it's predictable.
I just don't understand why they didn't ring the bell when he got it off the hook. That was that I was just like, well, AJ got it down first. Like, yep. You waited until it drops on, like, because if it drops on the mat and somebody picks it up, does that mean that, like, they won? I thought it was who got it off the hook.
Just like any kind of ladder match for a championship. Yeah. You don't have to, it's not like the Rumble, you have to have 2 feet on the ring mat. No, you just have to unhook it, period.
I'm so mad that AJ Styles doesn't have the case right now. And hopefully maybe they do that, because that was my guy going in. That was the only person that made sense. Who else would you have had win in that match?
Nobody. I said AJ Styles is the only one that should win this. I mean, you could have, maybe Daniel Bryan, right? But he's in the Intercontinental Championship tournament. There's a chance he wins.
He already won Money in the Bank. AJ hasn't yet.
Yeah. I know. It was just flat out. And really, the Money in the Bank pay-per-view ladder matches were really for nothing, because the Raw Women's Championship, or the Raw Women's Money in the Bank, is now gone because it was just secretly a title match. So there's no excitement there of who could cash in for the women, because the briefcase doesn't exist anymore. And then you have Otis on the men's side. I mean, this was a total waste of a exciting Money in the Bank championship or Money in the Bank ladder match that you look forward to. Ooh, they could cash it in. Here's where they could cash it in. Are they going to cash it in? There's no suspense now. And Otis doesn't excite me, so.
Well, yeah, it's just really weird, because you consider Money in the Bank, I consider it top four now. Like, I think it's a bigger main event, or not a main event, pay-per-view than Survivor Series, because they stopped doing the traditional matches, and even when they do, they're kind of jokes. So it was kind of disappointing to watch this, because it was like, it's Money in the Bank. Mm-hmm. Real terrible. And now Otis won it. Like, at least with Asuka, you were like, yes, okay, Asuka got it. Even if it turned into her actually winning the title. But you were still like, okay, they made the right choice, even though it was a terrible match. Like, there was no reason why AJ Styles didn't win that match. I'm really upset. Him with that briefcase would have been gold.
Well, there's rumors of AJ Styles and Undertaker not being done with their program. And there is some credibility to that, because AJ during the Money in the Bank ladder match was kind of spooked by, you know, like scary lights and Undertaker posters and things like that. And Undertaker has said on his documentary, like, I'd love to work with him. And obviously he did, but not in the format that I would like to see them work in. And that's in the ring. So I don't think that this program is done necessarily. And I'm fine if these Undertaker and AJ Styles have that one final match, and maybe AJ is the one to end up beating Undertaker. So my point is that this loss, per se, of AJ not carrying the Money in the Bank briefcase could be because they are focusing on AJ going on to something bigger. And maybe it's the IC title, or maybe it's eventually a program with Taker to end his career.
Oh, man, that's I think the way to go. I mean, I've been watching this documentary and I've been getting mad at him, because he did have moments where he could have just walked away and he didn't. And I understand and I get his head about it, but he had those moments, and I couldn't think of any way that, like, at this point, who would put him away. And AJ Styles is, I think that's a good nominee. I wouldn't hate it at all. I think it would be really good. And if he can go as he's saying he can go in this documentary now, because his hips are fixed, then let him have it, dude. Let him get in the ring with somebody who's not going to hurt him. Like,
he can carry the hell out of that match.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and imagine the bragging by AJ Styles of beating Undertaker in his retirement, or like AJ could make it epically like nuclear heat. I mean, he could, if AJ turned it up, like he could, he would be a perfect candidate, and it would be a very respectable match with AJ Styles there. You're not really concerned about the quality of the match as long as Undertaker just continues to bust his ass like he did before the John Cena WrestleMania 34 match. Which, damn, I mean, I could get into that in and of itself. But as long as he gets him into that kind of shape, this could be a good match with AJ Styles and Undertaker. This could be not five-star, but it could be like a, damn, Undertaker looks like the old Undertaker match.
I think they'll have a really good match. AJ is one of those people who makes anybody look good, and this is probably, he probably never thought that would ever happen. He probably never thought that that Boneyard match would ever happen. So it's just, it's a win-win situation. And AJ's still kind of like that old school star that they don't really have right now as a breakout, even though he's the older guy. He has that John Cena feel. I always think he has. He, you know, he's just all around top performer, and he has a feel that he would be worthy of putting him away.
Certainly has the, yes, I guess the case against it, if you're going to play devil's advocate, is wouldn't you want to use it to build a new star? AJ's on the back end of his career. You know, he would be the most credible, but wouldn't you want to have somebody that is up and coming that WWE sees as that next big, maybe heel, of using that to bolster their career for the next 10 years of constantly reminding fans of what he did? So that's the other end. Is the only question would be, well, who the hell is that? And the answer is, I don't know. But, you know, so I guess that's the argument against it, is wouldn't you want to use a younger star to then build that off of, to catapult them to that next level, and constantly piss off the fans telling them, hey, I retired the Undertaker. I retired the Undertaker. I retired the Undertaker. So there's that too.
I agree with that. But like you said, AJ is at the tail end of his career, and he's still, you know, doing really fantastic. I think he's doing some of his good, like, best work here in WWE. And I don't think anybody ever thought it was going to happen. I think he got better when he got here. And I just feel like they're going to try to get him every accolade that they can get him before he goes, because they know they screwed up. You know, it's one of those things. Out of all the, like, people that have debuted in the last, like, 5 years, new up of covers, new guys and stuff, nobody's gotten over as well as AJ Styles has.
Especially guys coming from outside of the WWE environment. Guys that, you know, you were always wondering when they'd finally come to WWE. When are they coming? When are they coming? And AJ took a long time to get here, but I think the time away from WWE and learning how to work outside of the WWE style, so to speak, benefited him coming in, because he had all that experience. He had all that time away from just being brainwashed of what the only way to do things is WWE's way. I think AJ is, yes, to your point, is probably one of the most successful guys to not be somebody from WWE's homegrown farm system to come in and do what he did. And yeah, I think he's got a lot of years. I shouldn't say a lot, probably a good 3 to 4 years left in his prime of giving us good to great matches. I don't want to see him throwing his body into concrete barriers every week. He doesn't need to do that. I would like to see him kind of slow down in the match department, and not part time, but certainly pick your spots, I guess, with AJ, because I think he knows that the mileage on his body is pretty damn high, and you need to pick your spots and be smart to elongate your career. So
yeah, he's doing stellar work, but I think he's the, like, you're thinking about who put away Undertaker, who would put away Undertaker, and I didn't think about him until you just said it, so it's a good idea.
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't come up with it, so I'm not going to take credit for it. So I'm not that smart. But I think it would be a good candidate, and I don't think this program is over, because they're constantly dropping small hints about it. And AJ's spooked by this or that that's somehow related to Undertaker. So I think we got a little cheated by not seeing a true in-ring match with these two. And I would like to see it, because I think AJ would cover up a lot of the holes in Undertaker's really game right now because of Father Time. So, all right. Well, was there anything else that we didn't touch on?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Well, in that case, yeah, I'm with you. I am out of points, but if anybody wants to tweet at us, well, you can't with me right now, but you can hit up Mary. And Mary, what is your Twitter?
At Mare, M-A-R-E underscore Bear, B-A-R-E. You can follow me on Instagram at Poppins311 too, but I don't pop up there very often. I'm bad at pictures.
Well, Twitter will be your platform then, because it's just much more text-based, so yes. But follow her in lieu of following the show, because as I said, we're trying to get things back in order. No clue why we got suspended. Maybe there's like a hacker out there who just like is sitting there in their basement, like, muhaha, like, you know, and we got him. Right. Yeah. It could be. I mean, I don't know. No idea. We'll get things straightened out. But, Mary, thanks again for coming on, and
thank you for having me.
Definitely. And the next time we talk will be, well, it'll be 3 weeks, of course, but will it be time? Yeah, I think chapter 4 of The Undertaker's documentary will have been out. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have to discuss that. It's so damn fascinating. So, and The Dark Side of the Ring, I got to catch myself up on that too. So,
yeah, it's a good watch. It's kind of hard at times, but it's another, I feel like if you're a wrestling fan, it's a must watch. Like, it's bringing up a lot of old memories and stuff. It's really good.
Awesome. No, well, I'll check that out. And everybody, please check that out. And go follow Mary on Twitter and Instagram. And Mary, thanks so much for coming on. And we'll be in touch soon.
Thank you for having me. And I hope everybody's out of their house soon.
me too. Me too. We're working on it slowly.
Yep.
All right. Take care, Mary.
Night.
You too. Bye. Hey, everybody. So it's not often that we talk about music here on this show or bands, but when we do, I think it's when it's worth listening to, and when I run across a song or a band that I think it's worth sharing on this show. And that's one of these moments, and that's one of those bands that I think you guys should listen to. And it's just a particular song right now. And the song is called To the Fallen Sons. It's by a band called Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S. And they're a newly formed band from Sweden. And they love making music about history, which is really, really cool. So this song in particular is about Carolians and the soldiers of the Swedish kings, King Charles VI and King Charles VII in the late 17th and 18th centuries. So let me give you a quick sample. And again, you can find them on Spotify under the song To the Fallen Sons. It's by Carolus, C-A-R-O-L-U-S.
Listening to the WWE podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to wwepodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/wwepodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.